A proposed new rule from the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and the Labor Department would impose a big reporting requirement on federal contractors with more than 100 employees. It's aimed at helping the government ferret out what it believes are instances of pay discrimination. You've still got time to comment, and joining me with more, Deborah Kelly, a partner at the law firm Blank Rome. Ms. Kelly, great to have you on.
Thanks. Good morning.
So this rule has already been through one round of comments, and it got a lot of feedback, didn't it?
It did. It really was met with great accolades on behalf of many who certainly understand that pay inequity is an issue that we have to address, but the means to address it has been fairly controversial. And the EEOC and its proposed rules responded slightly, but not in any significant way, to the comments that it heard from industry and from lawyers who do this on a regular basis, that is, try to guide clients who are government contractors and employers with more than 100 people on how to comply with the myriad employment laws, yet not get so overwhelmed that they get stuck in the mud and don't move forward.
Well, how fine-grained is the reporting required under this? Do you have to report salary and benefits by person within a company?
So what they there's the EEO-1 is this name of a document that employers have to complete each year, basically that says, let me look at your numbers on race, ethnicity, and gender. And what these new proposals did is they took this and they said, well, now we're going to have 10 broad job categories, but we're going to slice it up further into another 12 pay bands. So by the estimate of, for example, the National Association of Manufacturers, who looked at this and provided extensive comments, there's going to be a 2,400% increase in the number of fields that an employer must fill out when you consider all the extra data that's being demanded under the new forms.
And yet the data necessarily won't show whether someone's discriminating or not, because it doesn't take into account experience levels and performance levels of individuals, correct?
Yes, and I think one of the big issues is it uses the W-2 as a proxy for is the employer being fair. And a W-2 form, and I am not a CPA, thank God, but a W-2 form basically contorts as much as it clarifies. For example, if I get a job, I start a job, and you start a job, we both get the exact same base pay, we both have the same experience, we both start out equal. But I decide that I want to go to an 80% arrangement because I have kids. My company says, yes, this is my choice, I love my job, I'm still doing well, I just don't want to be there 100% of the time. When that data shows up, my company's a bigot, because you and I started at the same time, and you're making 20% more than I am. And there are other variables that would contort the data, too, whether one of us chooses to work overtime, whether somebody's contributing to a 401k, whether and what health care coverage one of us picks. So when you look at the W-2 data as a proxy for fairness, there's a lot of trouble with that. And a lot of the criticisms that have been filed about these proposed regs basically say, hey, we're not against pay equity. We employers are not in the let's cover up pay inequity world. We're just saying, as a way to do it, this isn't going to get you to the outcome you want, and it's going to bury us with administrative burdens, where at the end of the day, there's not going to be a big light that goes off and says, aha, now we've discovered this, because your underlying method of measurement, this W-2, doesn't work.
And if it is from the W-2 form, as a practical matter, doesn't the government have that data in the first place?
Yes, it does.
So it's almost a doubling down of, in other words, employers would be reporting data that they already report via the W-2.
And, again, far more data than is even in the W-2. There's, for example, there's an imperative to report cumulative hours, but under these reporting schemes, you would have to count the hours of an exempt employee in the real world, meaning someone who is not entitled to overtime. So the suggestion in these regs is, well, just pretend everybody who is exempt from overtime requirements works 40 hours a week. And everybody, most people who are exempt from overtime requirements, right, they understand that you may work 60, 70, 80. The job takes what the job takes. So that's another flaw within the system, treating people who are entitled to overtime, where you count the hours, as an hour band may be accurate, but treating people who are not entitled to overtime, that is exempt employees, as if they work 40 hours a week is a fiction.
We're speaking with Deborah Kelly. She's a partner with the law firm Blank Rome. And is there also the danger, or do companies feel there's the danger, of being hit with lawsuits over pay discrimination where it actually does not exist, and there's the cost of nevertheless defending yourself?
Right. So there's the favorite suits of plaintiff's lawyers now are these wage suits, because unlike discrimination, you don't have to say, you were looking at me in a suggestive way. No, I wasn't. Yes, you were, or something of that sort. It's math, right? So, and it's not just one person, because the argument is if you did it to one person in this pay group, you probably did it to everybody in this pay group. So wage and hour cases are the favorite of the plaintiff's bar. And while this is not a did you correctly pay overtime or didn't you correctly pay overtime matter, in the same family. So the concern expressed in the comments to these regs, and I'm sure that will be expressed in the next 30 days, is in addition to the fact that this is the wrong measurement to attack a problem that we all think should be attacked, it is done in such a way that it is going to be arduous, not work, and the confidentiality piece is of great concern. The EEOC, if under Title VII, there are sanctions if you disclose, but under these regs, the EEOC is going to share the information with two agencies that don't subject employees to sanctions if they disclose, the OFCCP and the Department of Justice. And the argument is that the pay data is going to be used by plaintiff's lawyers to go, aha, in this company, women are paid less than men. Now, maybe more women in this company are on reduced time arrangements, et cetera. But nonetheless, you can win a case, and only on TV is that a satisfactory outcome, because in real life, defending the case is so expensive and so time-consuming and can do such reputational damage that that's why companies often just sue rather than win, because settlement's cheaper than victory. So there's a real concern that what will come out of this is data that makes an employer look bad for the reasons that I've already said, and doesn't necessarily uncover an employer who is really engaged in pushing down the pay of women and minorities. And I don't think anybody is here to say companies ought to get away with that, because they shouldn't. But this means it's probably not going to get to that end.
Is there an alternate way to get at that actual pay discrimination?
So I think it's the National Association of Science had proposed the National Academy of Sciences had proposed that there be a study, a pilot study, to figure out what's the best way to collect pay information to get at the ugliness of pay inequity. And they were looking more at base pay or annualized comp as a way to do it, rather than a W-2, which has these deductions for the issues I already said, healthcare, 401ks, things like that, and do a pilot study, figure out what works, and then let's roll with that. But in both instances, the government, the first time around, didn't pay any attention to that. And in the second regs that were just released this week, they didn't pay any attention to that either. They're sticking with the W-2s as the way to go, even though the National Academy of Sciences report, which was in 2012, said this is not the way to go. Get a pilot study, figure out what the best measure is, and go with that.
Deborah Kelly is a partner with the law firm Blank Rome. Thanks so much. And by the way, you said the comments are due by August 15th?
I think that's right. It was 30 days from the date they were released. Under the proposed regs, an employer would not have a duty to report until March 31st, 2018.
Okay. You can share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.